You are listening to a podcast by the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the individual contributor and not necessarily those of HMDT.
Where to begin? Where and how did it start? One day, Gretel, my school friend, who had shared a desk, greeted me with an embrace. The next day she ran across the road and turned her head away so as not to acknowledge me. I wanted to call out, but turned my head away in embarrassment, shame, but not ashamed. Neither of us had changed in that short of space, or had we? The only thing different was that I was now stigmatized, visibly differentiated, marked with a yellow star on my left breast. But that was on the outside. Under the coat, under my skin, I was still the same person. I was angry, very angry, and that anger stayed with me throughout the next years, through persecution, torture, improvement, and humiliation. I hadn't changed. I wasn't going to let them change me. It's now no longer safe to stay here if you are a girl and wear a yellow star. So one cold February night, I and my guide crawled across the frozen no man's land from Slovakia into Hungary. My destination, my aunt in Budapest. She's a little timid person, and harboring illegal immigrants is a punishable offense. She's frightened and panics. Marton, my cousin, comes to the rescue. I've had girls staying overnight before. It'll just be my more than occasional girlfriend. But in the daytime, don't move about. The walls are thin. The neighbors may hear you. And it's very cold in the empty flat. Marton is called up for labor service, the alternative to military service for Hungarian Jewish men, so I'm passed on to someone else to look after me to help others escape. Many people are involved, so it is not surprising I'm captured along with 428 others. The investigators are not exactly kind. They feel they have to get admission of guilt one way or other. But I hadn't changed, and I wasn't going to let them change me. After time at the police station, I spent 3 months in prison. Investigation continued on a weekly basis. Eventually, I'm told they're going to let me go with a warning, but on leaving the prison, I'm arrested as an illegal immigrant, so the merry-go-round continues. Detention center, immigration center, eventually a refugee camp in the north of Hungary. They realize I'm no danger to them after all, and after a year or so, I'm allowed out on parole, have to report to police every week, stay where I'm sent, in a little town in Hungary where there's a distant family connection. My designation, illegal immigrant, a political prisoner on parole. I hadn't changed. I wasn't going to let them change me. Spring 1944, the Germans occupy Hungary and things change dramatically. Yellow stars are imposed, but that doesn't apply to me. I'm a political prisoner, different category. But will this make any difference? At dawn on the 6th of June 1944, D-Day, they round up all the Jewish people. But there's a rumor, the Allies have landed. It won't be long before they're here. Just hold on, just hold out. There is hope. The policeman to whom I had reported on the previous day says, "You should not have been there. I had asked you to stand the night with me. There is little I can do now." But after taking every single value I have, including my papers, he marks on the list my name, date of birth, profession nurse, status political prisoner. He can't do more. He could have done less. But only years later do I find this out when I see the list. Did it make a difference? I hadn't changed. I wasn't going to let them change me. They herded into a brickyard, 3,000 of us. I don't really know anybody here. In one bay of the brickyard, an improvised hospital. Women with newborn babes, people with wounds and scars, the insane wandering about, the sick moaning and crying. I go to help. There are so few of us. Most people have joined their family. There's little we can do. After a few days, a train with cattle wagons appeared. The sick are put in the last wagons with us, with a few doctors and helpers. One bucket with water, one bucket is human waste. On the second night of our journey, an elderly doctor crawls over to me. Please let me hold you, because I know that I shall never again be able to hold, to embrace anyone. We hold each other closely. Maybe it's the last time I'll hold someone. He seems to know where we are going. I don't. The train stops. Men with shaved hairs in striped pyjamas open the doors. Schnell, schnell, raus, raus. Leave the sick. Leave the old. Leave the children. Men to the right. Women to the left. A collective moan from the patients. Arms are stretched out, bleeding. But there is no time. There is nothing we can do. There are five of us women. The doctor has grey hair. We tie a scarf over her head, jump out of the wagon, link arms, her in the middle, absolutely crazily, singing the Hungarian national anthem. God bless the Hungarian with plenty and goodness. We march up and pass Dr. Goengele, who roars with laughter, points his stick as he sends us through the gate which proclaims Arbeit macht frei. Work gives you freedom. We have arrived in Auschwitz-Birkenau on the 17th of June 1944, the day which was to be my wedding day. I hadn't changed. I wasn't going to let them change me. There's nothing about Auschwitz-Birkenau that you haven't heard before, so why tell it again? Why agonize about something that can't be changed? Why should I tell you? You have heard it before, of the dehumanizing indignities inflicted on us, the way the weak, the sick, the unstable and unable are gradually eliminated, the stench of the crematorium, the soap made from human ashes, the lampshades made of human skin. However hard I try, these are images that cannot be eliminated, even if they are buried at times and for a time. Yet, against all the odds, we still hope. We hope we'll survive somehow. And I hadn't changed. I wasn't going to let them change me. At the end of July, we five, doctors and nurses, volunteered to go with the slave labor camp transport. If you get away from Auschwitz-Birkenau, you have a chance to survive. With 500 Hungarian women, we go to Lippstadt in the Ruhr to an armament factory. My knowledge of German lands me in charge of the Revier, the camp hospital. 250 more women join us in the late autumn and bring typhoid with them. We nurse them in an isolation camp. Most survive. We only have 8 deaths altogether in the period, although we have hardly any medication. Miraculously, 3 babies are born in the camp. We hide the mothers and the babes. By now, air raids are nearly continuous. We are taking into the town to help with the removal of rubble. How much longer do we have to wait? But now we feel that our hope must soon be realized. Towards the end of March, the factory falls silent. A train arrives in the siding, and we are told to put all the sick, the weak, and the mothers and babes in. They will be taken to safety to Bergen-Belsen. We will have to walk there. We walk at night, are hidden in the daytime in barns. We hear air raids, feel as if we were going round in circles. If anybody lags behind, the soldier gets detached, you hear a shot, the soldier comes back, the other person doesn't. And one day there are no barns. We are told to lay down in the field, the guards line the ditches. We hear church bells ringing, see the white sheets hanging from upstairs windows. We hear the rumble of tanks, see them in the distance, covered in pink sheeting. The medics have arrived. My comrades run screaming towards them, surround them, catch our guards and lock them in the church grip. I crouch by a ditch, unable to move. I'm taken to a nearby farmhouse. Lie on a wooden settle. Grandfather and mother and child sit at a table. A little girl comes carefully towards me, holds in her hand a brown egg and offers it to me. "'Tis the Sunday," she whispers, runs back to her mother and hides behind her apron. It took me 6 years before I could talk about this nightmare. I had locked those years away, good memories as well as bad ones, and lived a normal life. I didn't think I would ever talk about it, but then something happened, and I had to stand up and own up to my past. Why did I survive and so many died? I still don't know the answer. Perhaps I survived to bear witness, to tell the tale, hoping people will listen. Have humans learned from our experience? I don't know. I hope they have, because I hadn't changed, and I wasn't going to let them change me, but I was there.
Thank you for listening to this podcast by the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. You can find more resources and information at www.hmd.org.uk.